Hello everyone. A couple of weeks ago I made a video on Lenin's view of capitalist imperialism to explain why the likes of Elon Musk, no matter his stated views, are addicted to mass immigration. Now I should note I've had a bit of pushback on that video from a libertarian from Poland who, having experienced some of the horrors of socialism, understandably is a bit alarmed to see me quoting Lenin. This also forms the third part of what is now a kind of trilogy of videos where I've looked at some Marxist theory. The first one was the 10 books I recommended to James Lindsay, 10 left-wing books. The second one was the one a couple of weeks back on Lenin. And this is the third one, also drawing from Lenin. Before I continue, I've got a new toy I want to show off, and I'm past AA is going to come in with a little video I've made, and then I'm going to come back. Yes, new for 2025, friends. Using some of that Curry's comp money I was given, bought myself one of these mic arms, and then I used a kind of adapter switch to connect the mic arm to a webcam. So I now have this overhead projector. Makes me feel like I'm back in the lecture hall. Remember those overhead projectors? Just to prove it's me, there's my hand. There's one of my, there's Juan Lopez Seleccione number one, one of the Cuban cigars in my collection. And what we're going to be looking at is from Lenin's Selected Works, Volume 3. And it's going to be an essay called The State. You can see it there. And I'll just get it up for you here. And so this is going to be the basis of today's video, The State. Now I've got a little plan about what I'm going to use this overhead projector for going forward, but I just thought I'd give a little sneak preview of it today because I'm quite excited about it.
Sure,
Dan.
Can you command a comma like Joseph Conrad?
Sure, Dan.
Are you magnificent in your mastery of marginalism like Murray Rothbard?
Sure, Dan.
Are you legendary in your logical leveling of lamentable loquacity?
Sure, Dan.
Come on down to the January sale of the Academic Agency. Promo code SHORJAN for 25% off. All this January, I got more courses than the Queen had horses.
Sure, Dan.
I got better rates than Andrew Tate's had mates.
Sure, Dan.
I got better deals than Lizzo's had meals.
Sure. Sure, Dan.
And so, sure. And so, sure. And so, sure.
All right. Looking forward to using this camera, this overhead camera, more soon. Now, just before I continue, this guy, Tom Tabaczynski, he's from Poland and he's an Austro-libertarian, and he's made these three videos. I've started watching them. Now, they don't have a lot of views, but I think he took such a lot of time and effort. I owe this guy a response because I feel like I don't want people to think that with these videos, this is my like turn to become a Marxist or something, because it is not. But I will leave that for, you know, another occasion where, you know, when I'm a little bit less busy than I am now, I'll go through the stuff that Tom says there and give him a proper response. But anyway, let us return to the lecture at hand, as it were. Now, at the end of my Lenin imperialism video, I suggested that anyone opposed to immigration will find it hard to reconcile with a commitment to capitalism, that opposition to immigration. It's like the two things, capitalism and immigration, go hand in hand. That's what I am suggesting. Today, I want to expand on this view by considering the fact that socialism or socialists in practice, as opposed to in theory, seem invariably to transition into some form of left-wing nationalism born by necessity of their opposition to international capital and finance. Let me begin again with a quotation from Lenin. I have of late been studying random bits from the three-volume selected works, the one I just showed you. This is from The State, a lecture he gave at a university in 1919. This essay clarifies what the Marxist-Leninist view of the state is. And I think, regardless of whether or not you're a socialist, and I am not one, I'll reiterate, by the way, this is objectively a correct definition of the ruling class in America and in the West more broadly today. Because the ruling class is still ultimately the merchant class, even if it has taken on the form of managerialism, those managers still ultimately serve capital. No one could seriously say, for example, that Tony Blair is at odds with Larry Fink, or indeed that either of them are seriously, in the final analysis, at odds with Elon Musk or Donald Trump. In the end, all of these people, Blair, Fink, Musk, Trump, represent what Oswald Spengler called the money power. Now, a quotation from Lenin. He says, "The state is a machine for the oppression of one class by another, a machine for holding in obedience to one class other subordinated classes. There are various forms of this machine. The forms of domination of the state may vary. Capital manifests its power in one way where one form exists and in another way where another form exists. But essentially, the power is in the hands of capital, whether there are voting qualifications or some other rights or not, or whether the republic is a democratic one or not. In fact, the more democratic it is, the cruder and more cynical is the rule of capitalism. One of the most democratic republics in the world is the United States of America. Yet nowhere, and those who have been there since 1905 probably know it, is the power of capital, the power of a handful of multimillionaires over the whole of society, so crude and so openly corrupt as in America. Once capital exists, it dominates the whole of society, and no democratic republic, no franchise can change its nature." Now, what was true in 1905 seems only doubly true now in 2025. Now, what is interesting to me here is that despite the stated preference following Marx for communists to be internationalists, you know, one world communism and all that, in practice, opposing the international of capitalism has meant that most communist states have ended up tending towards some form of nationalism. The logic of this is obvious. If the hegemonic powers, first Britain and then America, were capitalist, they would direct their power against self-avowed, quote-unquote, anti-imperialists. We have seen today how America has tried to wield sanctions against Russia and against Iran. It has levied sanctions on Cuba, Venezuela, and practically any other nation that has sought a sovereign position apart from or in opposition to the forces of international capital. Whatever ideals these governments may have had, if they are to continue their struggle against the money power, their regimes invariably and inevitably become more nationalist and more autarkic. Whether this happens because this is the only way to keep a regime together, or because they are essentially pushed into such a position by the hegemony, which is to say America, is irrelevant. What matters for us is that this is what happens. Since Putin's turn against the West, Russia has become unmistakably more nationalist than when, in the past, it tried to be part of the system of international capital. Now, this happened in Lenin's own Soviet Union, especially under Stalin. He called it revolutionary patriotism. Partly, Stalin did this for World War II, since nationalism was a stronger motivator than communism to get men to fight and die. It's easier to get them to fight and die for Mother Russia than it is to get them to fight and die for communism. He promoted Russian nationalism. He brought back Russian classics in literature. He promoted a kind of classicism in music, a heroic form of social realism in the arts, massive statues and so on. In Yugoslavia, Tito promoted nationalism, which in some respect was necessary because as the ethnic breakdown of that country later on would prove, Yugoslavia was never a real country. That is, it was not all one kind of flesh and blood. There was not really the blood and the soil in Yugoslavia. It was always Serbia, Croatia, Bosnia, etc., etc. So he needed something like a Yugoslavian nationalism to knit them all together, is what I'm suggesting. In Cuba, both Fidel Castro and Che Guevara described themselves as revolutionary nationalists, and the Castro regime, similar to Stalin, became markedly more conservative, and it even took on Christian characteristics, because that's just the reality of Cuba, right? Similarly, Hugo Chavez, in his opposition to the global hegemon, ended up becoming more patriotic and more nationalistic, which has continued under Nicolas Maduro today. North Korea, an extreme case, practices Juche, which is one of the most thoroughly xenophobic doctrines ever devised. Almost as extreme was Enver Hoxha in Albania, whose nationalist policies included a massive push to increase the birth rate by restricting abortion. This tripled the population of Albania from 1 million people in 1944 to 3 million people in 1985. He also completely electrified the country, that is, taking it from being, you know, practically like it didn't have electricity, to having a grid, a power grid. He did that from 1944 until 1970, basically, was when Albania was fully electrified. Of course, communist China, too, has become markedly more nationalist since its revolution. Ho Chi Minh was a Vietnamese nationalist, of course, and some have argued that it wasn't communism that led the Vietnamese to fight as hard as they did against the Americans. It was the love of their homeland. It was the national spirit. It's a much more powerful motivator than communism. Now, all these regimes became immigration restrictionists, although often it was admittedly a case of preventing people from escaping than stopping them coming in. But nonetheless, they had immigration restrictions in place. Now, my point here is not to praise any of these regimes, or indeed to encourage you to become a commie, right? Far from it. My point is only that, no matter what the ideals were of each of these different cases, in opposing capitalist power, these regimes all ended up becoming more nationalist in character, as against the liberal nations, which followed the pro-capitalist path, like Britain, like America, like France, like West Germany, now Germany, which have all followed the same trajectory that we know all too well. Liberalism works as a corrosive acid to break down the nation. And I just find it extremely interesting. Now, that chap I mentioned at the start, you know, he was saying, well, Poland was devastated by communism. And I have no doubt that life was tough in Poland, and I do not defend any particular communist regime. Far from it. I've never been a socialist of that stripe. But I would point out to him to look at the demographics of Poland, to look at the social and cultural values of Poland, and compare those values that exist in post-communist Poland, the demographics and the the values, the social values, and compare them to Britain, for example, or to America today, and ask him, well, why is it that the country ravaged by communism, right, first Nazism, then communism in Poland's case, why is it that those countries that went through the anti-capitalist path, okay, ended up today being one of the whitest nations in Europe, being one of the most homogenous nations in Europe, and one of the most conservative nations in Europe? And what does he think will happen as Poland becomes more and more part of quote-unquote international capital? Will it become less nationalist in character or more nationalist in character? And I would suggest that, you know, as soon as Poland is plugged in, they're going to start the same stuff there. First it will be immigration, then it will be gay rights, then it will be all the other stuff. Okay? And what I'm saying is, no matter the stated ideals of the left, in practice you end up with Castro actually putting, you know, homosexuals in prison. Or, you know, you end up with Stalin bringing back, you know, Russian opera or Russian classical music from the past. It's just strange how it goes, okay? And that's not to say, of course, that communism is great or anything. Obviously it's not. It's a terrible, terrible thing. Disasters that have happened in history because of communism. I'm just pointing out specifically, to be clear, this link between capitalism and or anti-capitalism and nationalist sentiment. Okay. All right. A lot of stuff to think on. Let me know what you think of this in the show notes. And like I said, I feel a responsibility to respond to the Polish chap Tom there, which I will do in due course in the interests of academic and intellectual integrity. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.